Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. August, it's April 14th, 2011, and tonight I'm delivering the show by a very different means. So I hope the sound quality through some transitions here remains good. Tonight, the main science topic, I will be talking about Comet Elenin. It's a topic that I'll continue with in upcoming weeks. But I tried to do a search of the Internet just to get a handle on what people are saying out there, and it took me a very long time. There's so many pages out there and so many pages using my name and talking about me, it made my head spin. I could not hardly keep up with it. In a sense, I would say overall, people are getting smarter, but I have to caution people when they're trying to interpret my work. If you want to know what Jim McCanny says something about something, if you want to know what I say about, for example, Comet Elenin, then come to my webpage or listen to my radio show. And I appreciate the work that people are doing, the many amateurs, but it can lead to some really bad results. So here's the problem. The people are saying, oh, well, this could happen and this could happen. They're already attributing the Chinese earthquake to Comet Elenin, that there was a pole flip, there was a magnetic pole flip, that the Earth changed angles, and on and on and on. So you have to understand that some people might have good intentions. Other people might be involved in just plain disinformation. And then what happens is you get the white hats who can ride in and do the naysaying. Oh, no, this is all ridiculous, and it's all mixed together. So that's why I encourage people. One thing I'll say, it's sure driving a lot of people to my webpage to find out, understand the true nature of the solar system. And people are catching on. People are so tired. They are so tired of NASA. And the NASA, well, what else can you call it? I won't say anything bad on the radio, but the disinformation that's the people have just had it with this on a wide scale. My books are really the current printing on all my books is about to sell out, and we're reprinting as fast as possible to keep these on the shelf. But good grief. But the point is that when I search the Internet to try and decipher what people are saying out there about Comet Elenin and about me, there's hardly a web page out there that talks about Comet Elenin that doesn't mention my work. So that's a good thing. It drives people to my web page, and then people can get the books and read it for themselves. So that's what I always say. And then, like, for example, with Velikovsky or the Colburn, get the original documents. If you want to know what Velikovsky said, go to Velikovsky's books. Read what he said. You know, if you want to know what the Colburn says, don't buy something on Amazon. Go to the original source. It's available in Australia from the web link chaldeantrust.org. Go there. I'll be mentioning a little bit. I've got some listener mail that I'm going to go through this week, and one of the fans asked where I got information about the Colburn, because on the official Colburn site, the Chaldean Trust, it mentions that I introduced this to the United States, and so I'll hopefully have a little time. I'm going to make a note here. Colburn, where I found info. Okay, so that's a fan mail. So I'm sure a lot of other people are interested in that question, but go to the original source. So at any rate, it's going to be very hard for me to sort through all of the information that's out there about Comet Elenin. But I'm going to do an orbital analysis tonight and talk about this. Comet Elenin is seemingly a normal comet. There doesn't seem to be anything at this time unusual. Right now, Comet Elenin, let's see. Let me update my chart. In fact, I've got the orbital mapping chart here. And so let's come up to today's date, the 14th. Comet Elenin right now is about halfway out to the orbit of Jupiter from Earth. It's back behind Earth. It's not in a direct alignment. There was an electrical alignment around the 15th of March in which Earth, let me go back to that position, around the 15th of March. Yeah, and there again, there were no other planetary alignments at that time of significance. And with the comet that far away, probably twice the distance to the orbit of Mars, one would expect very little effect. I mean, these things can link together, but at that distance, probably not extremely likely. And here's the issue, everybody. When I talk about electrical alignments, since we don't have good measuring techniques, since NASA has not built spacecrafts using our national money that we put aside for a space program, my idea is that the space program should have space vehicles all over the place. But what does NASA do? Because it's a good money maker for the aerospace companies to build these one-at-a-time satellites. We should have thousands and thousands and thousands of drone satellites all over the solar system measuring electric currents, looking at plasmas, taking snapshots of various planets with micro-equipment that we have today. Look at the camera that you have in your telephone today. It's far, far superior than any cameras that were in space 10 years ago. So with this type of microelectronics, what's NASA doing? They're wasting our money. They're wasting our heritage. It is very aggravating. But the bottom line is we should have thousands and thousands and thousands of spacecraft monitoring the solar system where they could move between us and Comet Elenin and get a very good reading on the plasma effects, possible connections with Earth. What kind of currents are we dealing with here? So at any rate, I just wanted to mention, and also throughout the course of this, I want to note that none of the major outer planets are involved in the any electrical alignments. I'm having a little trouble with Jupiter being on the far side of the solar system at this time. But at any rate, so I'll be talking more about that. First of all, a few quick announcements. I just noticed this, and I picked these things up. This one came out of a Public Utility Commission announcement that a request, a rate increase was issued in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is one of the states that has a good deal of wind power, a wind source program where you can buy wind-related power so you can feel green about yourself. And at the old rate, let me look here. The old rate, here it is, I'm sorry, $3.53 per 100 kilowatt hour block. This was the previous rate for electricity, and that is increasing. The rate increase will go to $4.96 for the same unit of energy delivered to your house. Now, Minnesota has in the southwestern part of the state a good deal of wind energy, but remember, these are the extremely inefficient, once again, NASA design and NASA sanctioned, I should say. I don't know if they were actually in the original design, but regular energy costs around $9.21 per kilowatt hour. So at any rate, there's a 40% increase coming for those who have signed up for a wind source program. And just a little bit of analysis here, but the cost of wind power actually being delivered going up. and I've done a number of shows on this, that the three-blade wind system, the ones you see now, General Electric, just announcing a 10-megawatt system that they expect to be out in the field within the coming year, these are extremely inefficient units. When you look at what they do and the energy they trap from the passing wind, they're lucky on an industry standard to get 20%. So imagine someone putting up this 500-foot tower with blades that are many hundreds of feet long and out in the middle of the ocean, and all of this infrastructure to put this in, and it's a supposed to be, they claim it's a 10-megawatt tower, but it only runs at around 15 to 20 megawatts on average. So the whole wind industry, as I've talked about before, and that was the point of my February 16th show when I was on Coast to Coast AM, I said the myth of alternative energy, this is being done, and it's, of course, GE, who has a bigger concern in, say, nuclear and other types of energy than General Electric. So they can put these big systems out there, but they're terribly inefficient, and they really are not going to solve the world's energy problem. So just a little bit there on the rate increases expected with wind energy. Okay, I'll take this article next week. Here's something that I'll be talking about next week. The NASA has seen an exploding galaxy. I'll be talking about that. Also, I should quick mention the Discovery Channel is putting out an 8-part series internationally, and it deals with the plight of man living on this planet. And I thought, gee, that's sure interesting. It sounds kind of like a follow-up to the subject I developed in the Diamond Principle book. And I've always, so I'll be following that particular series. I'm not going to do a lot of analysis beforehand, but I'm sure the series is already well edited and finalized now that they're moving into, I believe it's supposed to be released in a month or two. But also, I'm sure it's packed with misinformation about how our planet is and the relationship of humans to the planet. Some of these I like. They have a lot of information, but the real crux of the issue, for example, when I, in The Diamond Principle, my latest book, I get right to the core of the issues that affect us, the bankers, the type of investment that go into science, that go into space research these days, why it cannot possibly bring about good results for the human race, the things that we really need because it's based on profit, the things we really need, for example, putting large volumes of people out into outer space in autonomous cities, there's no profit in that. There's no profit, so there's no incentive for investors to do this. I talked about the Popular Science magazine article that would make you think we're really headed out into outer space and we're going to go visit the next stars. And by the end of the article, it had completely burst your bubble of any thought of ever doing such a thing. So, at any rate, also I want to make mention, there's a book, it's been around since in the 70s, I believe, 1979, original version 1979, Oak Ridge National Laboratory, Nuclear War Survival Skills, with a foreword by Edward Teller, author Crescen H. Kearney. And so this is from the heart of the Cold War era, Life-Saving Nuclear Facts and Self-Help Instructions. The name of the book, once again, Nuclear War Survival Skills. And I would love to carry this on my page, but I'm just limited with the things I can do. But I talked about this book last week, how one of the charts, one of the maps in the book, shows radiation from alleged bombs that would be dropped in Russia. This was during the height of the Cold War. And then following the radiation around to the United States. Last week I talked about the last 2 weeks on my show, I talked about accumulation of radiation and how the United States is not reporting the issues, the radiation issues coming from Japan. I understand that Europe is making public announcements regarding the radiation levels in food that, okay, here's the sequence. Plants, they breathe, they take in water, so they take in a lot of water over the course of their lifetime through a growing season. If radiation is in the water or in the air, the plants are there in assimilating this all the time. So that's where plants get the good stuff. When you eat minerals and you have enzymes and all of the things that are good in a plant, those are building up over time. So so all of those in a very slow rate, but building up. That's why when you eat corn or beans or peas or grain, all of the goodness stored in there has taken a lot of time, and it's taken the elements out of the water and out of the air that pass through it every day. Now introduce radiation. And believe me, in the United States, they're not giving you the real laundry list of radiation isotopes that are coming into this country. I thought it was horrible when they started announcing that iodine 131 isotope was being discovered in milk in Oregon. Well, do you think that's the only radiation particle that's coming into this country from Japan? Of course not. This is plutonium, bomb-grade plutonium that they were burning in these plants, and it's blowing all over the place. So in the United States, they're simply not, completely irresponsible government with Obama trying to approve more nuclear installations for this country. Absolutely absurd, and as I've said before, we never needed nuclear, we never needed oil, we never needed coal. It was known in the early 1900s how to tap into the vertical electric field of Earth up to the ionosphere. Tesla had the towers built. He was operating them. And they came, the Morgans and the other people that were controlling the money at the time, came and tore his systems down. And basically, as I call in the Atlantis to Tesla book, when I first talk about the Tesla towers, etc., that it entered a century of darkness. Just imagine the early 1900s with the tremendous pollution that was occurring. We could have had electric cars from the very get-go. We could have had electronic rail systems with mass transportation. All of this taken down for one small, greedy group of people, which leads to an entire lifestyle, because remember that the banks, what do? They loan to the masses for your housing and for your automobile. Those are people's major expenses. And when you look at it, the majority of your expense is in interest to a bank that shouldn't even be here. So I said, and I'll repeat this, because on the, I think it was that February 16th, this year interview on Coast to Coast, I had the bulk of the show there as a guest. George Norrie asked me, he said, "Jim, what's the biggest problem in the world today?" And I didn't really get to the core of the matter. I may have been a little tired or not thinking on my feet as fast as I should have. But I should have said, and it is the real problem, we got to get rid of the world banking community as it stands today. We need banks, but not the ones that are there today, the international banks that sponsors war and the military and the runs the governments in 160 countries in the world, the one that sponsors the CIA in this country. All of this has to go. And it's a real mess. It's a real mess because these people are in power. They control the military. They control the spending. They control the loans that are driving this country into disaster. The dollar diving on a daily basis. The fact that silver and gold are going up, the silver and gold are not going up in value. The dollar is going down in value by leaps and bounds. It only has a short time left. But at any rate, disaster for the American public based on greed and the bankers who have controlled this country since the early 1900s. Okay, so at any rate, the food update, I want to talk about the food situation because we do have radiation coming in. If Europe is already announcing that it's going to be dangerous to eat the food after this coming growing season, then the United States will be worse. We're closer to Japan. We're getting more of the fallout than Europe. And so the situation is that, yes, accumulation of radiation in plants is going to happen. It's not being reported in the United States. The energy agencies and the groups that should be monitoring this are controlled by the same groups that sell energy, nuclear energy, the GEs of the world, the scientists. And that's another problem with government-owned scientists and science. They can always get somebody out there to give some statistics, to falsify information, to lie, to not tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So, but anyway, as far as my webpage is concerned, yesterday I finally took down the grab-and-go buckets. The lead time on those had just gotten out. Anybody that has orders in on those is in the delivery queue cycle. Anybody that has orders in for any of the products, whether they may still get, some people are still getting some Mountain House products. They're a little slow to come in. But the point is that anybody that has an order in will have those orders filled. And so I'm not taking any more orders on grab-and-go buckets. Possibly, I understand that it may loosen up come May. And I don't know about that. I'll just wait and see. And I hope that they do become available. But for right now, I had to take them off the sales page. Other items, the pre-filter, were barely keeping up on that. So and I suspect that the way ordering has been going, I might have to pull that down for a little while, just so we can maintain the reasonable distribution of that particular product. But it's a product for the time. I introduced it last August. It is a pre-filter that takes out. It's called the pre-filter universal. ChemRad oil pre-filter. Universal because it fits any of the major brand water filters, including the plastic ones, including the stainless steel ones. So if you've got one from another company or another source, of course I sell the Dalton water filters and it certainly fits that one. It does not fit the mini emergency travel filter. I just wanted to clarify that because some people had asked about that. Potentially you could use it, but it's if you're carrying the small emergency travel filter around, the pre-filter is a big unit in the powders, etc. I should mention the powders because there have been some questions about that. I really don't announce what is in the powders. It's a packaging mix that has been developed. And there are many properties that filter powders, in this case powders, or in a filter element like within the Dalton. By the way, the pre-filter is not a Dalton product. It's a private label product. But any filter element has to do two things. It has to take out unwanted pollutants from the water, and it must not introduce other contaminants into the water, and that's where some people break down on their knowledge of water filters. So at any rate, the pre-filter is set up. It comes with powders that are pre-designed for various different types of pollutants. So depending on whether you have chemicals in your water, if you have oil in your water, if you have nuclear radiation in your water, you would use a different combination of the powders that come with this. And so I want to tell you that these powders are food and medical grade powders. So these are certified, and so a bit of research went into the development of the pre-filter. And I've heard various, of course, there's anytime you do something and start to succeed, somebody's going to want to come along and cause you problems, especially our good old disinformation crew, that type of thing. So we've been on the guard for that, and we knew any time that something I do that I succeed, I'm going to have a fleet of people following me around trying to figure out what I'm doing and what they can do to diminish my success, let's put it that way. The pre-filter is no exception. So I just want to let you know this is a product that was way ahead of its time. I released it last August, and it immediately sold out, and I was just amazed at the demand at that time. But now with the radiation from Japan, with chemicals and other situations where people are really waking up in mass, and the understanding that this pre-filter fits any water filter that's out there, any of the major large countertop water filters, that this will fit on any of them, makes it a very desirable item. So at any rate, that is still on the page, the sales page. If it comes down, it will go back up again once we catch our breath, so to speak. But at any rate, and all of the other products are there, the Dalton water filters, I've just seen a large increase there. Once again, barely able to keep up with demand on the Dalton water filters. So if you want these, I suspect that if there's another major event of any kind, that the ordering of these things will just outstrip the supply, and we'll have to take down any links to ordering these. So if you want something, the water filters, the pre-filter, the flax seems to be pretty stable as far as supply and demand. But there again, I don't know. I'm surprised as I called around myself to look at food supplies in the country, how little there really is. And once people wake up and start ordering across the board the many food products that are out there, they're going to simply disappear and they won't be available anymore. So at any rate, that's the situation. I would say that, yeah, we're going to have a problem with food in this country. That I would say the government is not giving you the true story. The food that will be grown this summer in the United States may not be edible. The cows that produce milk may not be palatable. It may have radiation to the level. And this is the accumulation issue. As I said, every plant is accumulating moisture and air, so they're filtering that. That's the same situation I explained last week about the ocean. We all know about mercury poisoning in fish, where the plankton filter the ocean water in large, large quantities. Then the fish eat that. Then the next size fish or little, shrimp or other creatures in the ocean eat that, and then it goes up the food chain, and the mercury does not leave the organism. It remains, so that you have a tuna or a salmon that is filled with mercury because they have eaten everything in that food chain that has filtered the ocean water. So basically, you get a high concentration of mercury in fish. Well, the same thing is going to happen with the radiation from Japan. It's going to concentrate in seafood, and it's going to kill this planet. This is just absolutely outrageous, and we have a bunch of buffoon morons running things. And I should give an honorable mention here, too, when it comes to buffoons and people hiding the truth from the public. I want to give an honorable mention to magazines like, say, Discover Magazine, which does not run real articles. National Geographic, when it comes to science, sure they have pretty pictures, Sure, they got a glossy cover, but they do not run real stories. And the stories they run, they go to the government, just the tier two gee whiz stories. Discover Magazine. How many times can you put Big Bang something discovered or the latest, the farthest? How many times can you put that on the cover of your magazine and expect the people out here to keep buying that? It is absurd. So along with the problem of the government-owned science and scientists are the magazines that distribute information to the public. They really are not doing a public service to the public because they don't do real reporting. The real issues are not covered. The only place you're going to hear about those are on this show. The Discovery Channel special coming up, I'm certain I'll be doing reporting on that, but I already know the direction that's going to take, and you do too. I want to mention this also. When I look through blogs today, and I get to surf the internet some. I don't have a lot of time to be out there surfing the internet, but I'll see an article like this white hat guy that I'll be reading the article here or talking and commenting about Comet Elenin. The situation is that I'm talking about the blogs that come afterwards. The people go right at this guy. They're attuned. I've finally gotten the public educated out there, and now the people are waking up en masse because it affects them. Everything that's going on affects them, and people are waking up big time. So congratulations, people. And I've been pounding on these subjects for many, many decades, believe me. And when I first started criticizing NASA and what they were doing and the problems with NASA, people said, oh, how can you say anything about NASA? My goodness. Well, now people understand. And I didn't back down. I kept talking about it. I kept pounding on it, and now people understand. And now it's time for magazines like Discover Magazine, National Geographic, to wake up to the fact that people don't buy your BS anymore. They don't buy it. You might have a bunch of geeks sitting in grandma's basement out there that still read your magazine and think it's swell. But the vast majority of people are waking up, and they don't think it's funny that you're wasting a national resource in a magazine that should be this high a quality. It does not have any real understanding of what's going on in the science world. It's just gee whiz, glossy cover. Okay, enough of that. I'm not going to waste my show talking about this because there's so many important topics to cover. I'm going to quick mention, a listener. I'll read the email if I can quick find it here. Okay, this is a listener. Dear Professor McCanny, I've recently become interested in the Colbran, and I'm trying to find out more about its provenance. On the Chaldean Trust website, it says, this Chaldean Trust version of the Colbran, K-O-L-B-R-I-N, was publicly disclosed online by Professor James McCanny. Are you the person they refer to? If so, please tell me. When did you first come across the Colbran? Where you first came across the Colbran? What form it took, and was it handwritten, typed, or printed? It would be tremendous to know about how the Colbran emerged and whence it came. Okay, let me give you a little bit of background on the Colbran. Now, there are a number of people have really destroyed the history of the Colbran, a bunch of people with no background, with no understanding. One clown was out there saying of course, we all know it originated. It was the set of books in a library. Joseph of Arimathea was the uncle of Mary Magdalene, or Mary, mother of Jesus. And after the crucifixion, he was a Roman nobleman. He was a businessman. Part of the time in Christ's youth was spent in England, where he did a lot of trading with the metals and other types of trading that were coming in from England at that time in the Roman Empire. But Joseph of Arimathea was a rich guy. He had a vast library. And after the crucifixion, he went to England, and he started a monastery there, basically, which part of it is still there today. But it, around, and I don't have all the dates in front of me here, but well into the very, very early Middle Ages, the Romans went out to destroy that monastery. And I'll go into a lot more detail. But as I said, there's one clown that's running around that goes, one copy went east, and one copy went north, and one copy went west, and one copy went to the one copy went to each of the four directions, and one went to India. And they all ended up on this clown's desk, all translated back into English with the exact same translation. Now, what's the probability of that happen? That's like the monkey taking a typewriter and typing the Bible 50 times in a row by chance. No, this is absurd. And so there are people that got on radio shows and should have never been there that had no idea what they were talking about. There's another illicit version of the Colburn. It's sold on Amazon. It's by some people who literally took page for page, Xeroxed the Colburn, and then changed it and added a bunch of misinformation, and then had the nerve to claim they wrote the Colburn. And it's they call it the Colburn, and it's on Amazon. It's a small paperback book, and it has the picture of a big orange ball on the cover. Total misinformation. And that just shows you how afraid the people in charge of this planet are of that book, the Colburn. But I've issued a warning to people, don't buy that. If you buy that one, send it back and get your money back. Go and get the real version. It's available at chaldeantrust.org, and that link is on my webpage. Go there and get the real Colburn. It's a gorgeous big book. So at any rate, make sure you get the real Colburn and then read it cover to cover. The Colburn basically starts as an accumulation of books. Okay, so let me explain. Joseph of Arimathea, of course, was living at the time of the crucifixion. So when we talk about the start of zero in our calendar, that was right in that time frame. And, of course, there's some arguments as to when the real zero point of our calendar was, and that has changed actually a few times. But the point is that the library of Joseph of Arimathea included history books that went way back into history that gave the original and true origin of man, the rebirth of man, as it is called in the Colburn. So it goes back to the books that were passed down from before the great calamity, the great catastrophe, when the comets rolled through this solar system and destroyed Earth, just about killing off everything. We know there were mass extinctions then. There were probably many of them. In the Colburn talks about the many comets, not just one. And that's where Velikovsky identifies the comet Venus. A lot of people make mistakes identifying Venus, the comet, with Nibiru. Well, Venus, the comet, became the planet Venus, so how could it be Nibiru coming back someday? There's a lot of contradictions out there. But at any rate, the Colburn is a modern name. It came in the early 1990s. There's a group that held these books, and there was an old man that held them I won't go into all of the details where they were held, because a lot of this is secret for obvious reasons, because there are people trying to destroy this and destroy the history of this book. There was a woman, a very courageous woman, who sat with the old man as he went through the old texts. And they were, many of them, shredded. These were the original texts from the fire in England, from the Abbey. And so they went through and, for the most part, translated these into English text. out of the many, many books and the pieces of books that remained in the what you might call trust, entrusted with the group that had held these books since the Middle Ages. A lot of them had been carried out of there before the Roman armies came, and afterwards the people went back and picked up the pieces. So anyway, the many books of the Colbrin are pieces of this original stock of books. So it's a collection of books that came from the original Joseph of Arimathea library. When you read this, you understand that there's a tremendous effort today to try and destroy that history from man. And the reason is because if you can destroy a history, you can destroy the population. So at any rate, you can destroy the population understanding where they came from. Okay, so when did I first come across the Colbrin? I'm not going to put an exact date on that, but what happened is, I had been well known for a long time. In the public eye, I've been doing radio shows and public speaking, and I've had papers published in journals and magazines that go back to 1979 when I was at Cornell University. So within both the scientific circles and within the public circles, within certain circles, I was well known. The Colbrin talks very specifically about events in the sky, and they use imagery to describe which are absolutely certain the great comets of old. As I said, there wasn't one of them, there were many, and these comets did war in the skies, as the people described them. And then the Colbrin talks about the destruction of man, then the rebirth of man, and when you read this, it makes the hair in the back of your neck stand up, believe me. So I suggest you get the real Colbrin and read it. At any rate, these people got a hold of me and they sent... the Colbrin was first published in book form, in print, in the beautiful form you can still buy it today, in around 1991. And it was held and they really didn't know what to do with it. So there were three copies, and they wanted to get a copy to me. And so I won't tell you who got it to me, but there were some people in the United States who found out about it because they knew that these ancient texts existed. They went on a search for them, and the two groups met up, the group searching for these and the group that held them. And so they got three books to the United States. I got one of them. The other two people were private parties who were simply interested in the book, but the reason the Chaldean Trust wanted it to put it into my hands is so I could interpret it, so I could tell you what the book said. After researching and dealing with this for a while, I finally made it public in the book, which made many things public, including my Tesla research, the book called Atlantis to Tesla, The Colbrin Connection. And so, anyway, that brings us up to around, I forget when that book came out, it was probably in around 2004, 2005, maybe earlier. I don't remember the first printing of that book. But it's still selling briskly. It's one of the more popular books in the set of six books that I have. And then the question is, what form did the book take? It had all of the forms. It was handwritten, it was typed, and it was printed. And so the printed copy, of course, was the one that was the summary of everything. But other than that, there's the person that is asking about this is from England. So I think it's important to understand the history of this, and when, like any good classroom, when one person asks a question, there's a dozen, or in this case, about 2 million other people that want to know also. Okay, well, I went through, I've used a lot of time here, so it's cutting into my Comet Elenin discussion. Let me see what else. But that was a very important question, I thought. Let me see if there's... I've talked about the items on the web page. I would say, I want to mention also that the pre-filter, like any filter, filters do a certain job, and they take a percentage. They take a percentage out of the water, whatever the pollutant is. The purpose of the pre-filter is to get the bulk of the gunk and bad stuff out of your water before you put it into your regular water filter, because it accumulates. Say you have sulfur, say you have oil, say you have bad chemicals, say you have nuclear radiation, say you have anything else. If you put that water raw without pre-filtering into your water filter, over time that's going to accumulate. Well, if it's sulfur or other minerals in the water, not too big a deal. You can scrape that off of the water filter. The Dalton water filters are reusable. You just scrape off the surface of that ceramic filter, just a very surface layer. You can do that hundreds of times and reuse the filter element. But with radiation, you really don't want much of that going into your filter, because it'll work its way into the filter and you can't scrape it off the surface. So you don't want your filter element becoming basically accumulating radioactive material. So that's why the pre-filter is something that will get that out of there. And then once again, I have to clarify, this is a percentage issue. And you try and get as much out as you can, and then you just have to deal with it, whatever is left over. The water filter will hopefully take out the bulk of the rest of it. But there's no filter that's perfect. There's no filter that's 100%. I don't care what element or what pollutant you're dealing with. There's no filter made in the world that's going to get 100% of it out. So at any rate, just to understand a little bit about filters. Okay, well, let's see if I can get through some part of Comet Elenin here. I'll start with let me see how much time I've got left here. I've got about 10 minutes left, it looks like. Okay, so let me quick go through the dates. And as I said, just be cautious going through the internet. There's so much misinformation out there. Yeah, I appreciate people who talk about me, but in general, if you could reference people to my webpage so they can buy the books and understand this. I should have done a review on Comet Elenin a long time ago. I personally didn't see it as a major factor, but it's being pumped up so much in the press out there and in the internet that that's why I'm taking a little bit of time here to discuss it. Okay, Comet Elenin right now is coming in to the solar system. It just passed an alignment where it was, like I say, about halfway the distance from Earth to the orbit of Jupiter. And that alignment, some people are saying that, of course, that happened around March 15th. And people are saying that's caused all kinds of Earth changes, pole shifts, all kinds of other things. Let me make something perfectly clear. Unless you have measurements, unless you have real measurements of the plasma situation dealing with this comet and connecting it to Earth, and then directly connecting that to a specific event such as an earthquake or whatever, then you really don't have data. I've used cometary and planetary electrical alignments statistically. For example, the Hurricane Floyd situation I talked about last week, 5 hurricanes in the Atlantic at one time, September 6th. What year was that? 1999? I'm trying to think of Comet Lee, I'm sorry, was the Floyd Comet Lee. And that I predicted in May of that year. I said, wow, this is all of the factors here are lining up. This is going to be a barn burner, and it was. And the week before that happened, there was all kinds of guffawing and hilarious slams at me on the internet, because there was nothing going on. In the Atlantic, there was no foul weather. Everything was calm. the sun was calm. And that midnight on that night, five hurricanes broke out in the Atlantic. We had something like 60 storms around the world. 60 tropical storms broke out that night. Now, this is not chance. This is real. There was a way to predict that. I predicted it. And the silence on the internet amongst the white hat and the government paid disinformation people, the silence was deafening, as they say, because it was such a blatant prediction so far in advance, and it hit it right on the nose at a time when nobody else imagined such a thing could happen. Okay, so right now, looking at Common Elanin and looking at the factors, the percentage factors here, the March 15th date, where Comet Elanin was aligned on the far side of the sun with Earth, does not indicate to me that there is a factor there that would affect Earth. Let me step up to September 22nd. Now, I'm going by dates that I've seen both in people have written asking about these, people have posted things on the internet. And I want to mention also about the March 15th dates, which just as were passed a little bit, about a month ago, that the planets Mercury, Venus, and Mars are not associated with these alignments at all. So I'm going to go and step this up to September 27th. Okay, now the August, September... let's just step this up. And what happens now, I should mention also, last week I talked a little bit about Comet Elanin, and I really didn't have time to go into this, and I used a September 11th date for Comet Elanin, and I mentioned that at that time, September 11th did not have a lunar factor. But the real date I should have quoted, and I'm sorry about this, even I'm human and I do make errors, so when I do, I'll let you know. Last week's show I said September 11th. The real date is September 27th. And there we have an electrical alignment with Comet Elanin well inside the orbit of Venus. It's about halfway to the sun. And we have a new moon, and therefore 2 days later, a new moon passing. Remember, the new moon passing is the more important date. It's about 2 days after the new moon. I discuss that particular topic in my book. There is an Earth-Comet Elanin alignment with a new moon. There could be some triggering there. I've also mentioned that we could get some viruses in the atmosphere. It's potential that Comet Elanin's tail has developed some virus, so we could have some flu strains or some viral strains on Earth, a slight spike in sickness. Once again, Mars, Mercury, Venus, not a factor there. Jupiter out of the picture also. Okay, now I'm going to go up to, and once again, these are factors. Say we had a solar flare that day that came out and connected Comet Elanin with Earth. If say a big solar flare came out, the comet and Earth are in alignment, well, then that could change the picture. Depends on local factors that we can't see at this time, such as solar flares. Okay, so now we're going to go up to October 16th, and that was one of the other dates. Okay, this is where Comet Elanin is ahead of Earth and in Earth's orbit. So it is basically crossing Earth's orbit. All of this time, by the way, Comet Elanin is sweeping up towards Earth. And this is somewhere in this region of time around September or October 16th, somewhere in there, and I forget the exact date, will be the closest approach, which is about 0.2 astronomical units. That's still a long ways away, but in terms of electrical alignments, if Earth and this comet connect, then we could see right in the heart of the hurricane season, we could see some hurricane activity. So at any rate, but as far as... Now, here's what I wanted to say, that this this, I announced this on my webpage, and I want people to get their telescopes ready because this provides an excellent, excellent opportunity for viewing the sunward spike of a comet. And Elenin, because it has aligned with Earth electrically, could kick it off to be a comet much larger than normal in this time frame. It could expand Elenin's comet Coma and tail and electrical activity substantially. So this, in other words, instead of dramatically affecting Earth, Earth could be drastically affecting the comet, where in that time frame from September 27th to October 16th, the comet could be experiencing quite a brightening. But in this time frame of around also about the 1st of October to October 26th, and then for quite a few days afterwards, we're going to have a broadside view of the comet. Now, why is this important? Because NASA, in their Dirty Snowball Comet model, says that what we observe as a sunward spike on comets is really an optical illusion. So I've pointed out that we have many, many, many examples of comets that we have seen broadside to the and relative to the sun, and the comet spike is very definitely to the sunward side, and it's very definitely electrical. The cover of my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, shows some comet spikes that are like a helix, a helical shape, and that's due to the magnetic fields in the spike. That picture being drawn by the ancients who saw apparently some very large comets. So in that time frame around October 1st to October 16th, get your binoculars, get your small telescopes, backyard telescopes, or your equipment out, and go take a look at Comet Elenin. Look at the great pictures that usually come in with these comets from amateurs on the internet, and take a look at that, and very likely we're going to see some very heavy spike activity here. So at any rate, I'm about out of time here. As I say, I have a clock. I'll have to continue with this next week. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.